Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. Happy day before the 4th of July. I hope you had a great weekend and also that you have exciting plans for the 4th. Although I'll have a cautionary tale about the 4th of July coming up momentarily. Also on the show today, a couple key rulings from the U.S. Supreme Court. One of them, I think, will do more than anything in recent history to set our country on a course toward a true meritocracy, which is a very, very good thing. Also, while I was on vacation over the weekend, it's official. It became official. Dave Reichert filing with the Public Disclosure Commission to run for governor of Washington State as a Republican, of course. But will Republicans do what they often do in this state and ruin things by fighting with each other? We'll discuss. I'm also going to talk about a pretty disappointing DeSantis campaign video that plays right into the hands of Democrats ahead of the 2024 election. And later on, Washingtonians hit with tax overload. Oh, what is the working class to do? If you have not become an Undivided subscriber already, please do so. You can sign up for just $5 a month at patreon.com, or I'm sorry, undividedpod.com. I always give out the old website, undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. You can help us with our mission and our movement to give common sense a comeback. So before we dive into, we'll start with the update on Dave Reichert. Hello, Nicole Thompson. I have a cautionary tale about the 4th of July.
Oh, no.
What do you have planned for tomorrow? Fireworks?
I always go to Blaine.
Okay.
Small town, 4th of July parade, fireworks show, little street fair, all the things.
So as you know, I have been at a family reunion.
Yes.
In Minnesota. And we were at my cousin's house, probably 50 to mm-hmm. maybe even more of the Armstrong family, which is okay. what our tree is. So we're there Saturday night and we're doing our thing. And we had some really just, there's a law in Minnesota that fireworks have to stay on the ground in that town we were at.
Okay.
So you can't have poo-poo ones up in the air. They've got to be ground ones.
Like
you
know,
the little
bombs,
like the poppers
like
and the smoke bombs. Mm-hmm. The lame ones, right? But everything for a reason. So we had done our fireworks thing the night before. And that night, we were just sitting around the campfire. And it was pretty late. And the neighbors had had a fireworks display of some shooty into the air things. No
okay.
big deal. But it had been done for an hour. All was quiet. Mike and I, as responsible adults, get ready to walk back to our hotel, which was like four blocks from uh-huh. my cousin's house. And all of a sudden, we're going across down the driveway, and we look over, and we see a bonfire at the neighbor's house. And we're like, and then we stop for a second, because we heard some shouting, and we're like, that's not a bonfire. The house is on fire.
The house was?
The neighbor's house was on fire, and instantly, within,
oh,
not
no.
like, within 60 seconds, it's engulfed. That fast, and all of a sudden, Mike and I, all of our family, which includes young kids, they're running. Oh. We're running for our lives because you hear fireworks going off like crazy because it started in the garage. Fireworks
oh
going off
gosh.
Like crazy. Rounds of ammunition. Just do-do-do-do-do-do-do. And, I mean, they just explode. There's no projectile function there, but we're running. Boom, boom, these huge, like, probably propane tanks. So we're just dead sprint as far away as we can get.
Is this neighbor to the hotel or neighbor to your cousin?
Neighbor to the direct neighbor to my cousin.
Okay.
So we are watching a house burn down before our very eyes. It's a small town. There's only a volunteer fire department. So the whole thing is a loss. I mean, this hot, quick fire. And the guy, thankfully, he was sleeping on the couch inside the house when it happened, smelled smoke, got out. He's running, telling people, call 911. And
so
just
it wasn't
watching
even
his
him
whole house.
With fireworks. It was somebody else's fireworks.
No, so one of the things he said is that, and this is my cautionary tale, because I just love you guys. I don't want your house to burn down. I don't want you to burn down someone else's house. I don't want you to get a hand blown yeah. off or a face blown off. So I don't know if the investigation has pinpointed for sure the exact cause, mm-hmm. but he said something to the effect of there had been a firework that was they thought was a dud. And he tossed it back in the garage.
Oh, no.
So if that's the case and it's fireworks related, I mean, that's awful. It was horrifying. I've been to a lot of fire scenes, obviously, in the course
wow.
of my job and wildfires, but I've never been there at the precipice of a fire when someone's home burned down. We had little kids and like just horrifying.
And
the
everybody
explosions.
Just watching.
Everybody just watching. And you heard the volunteer firefighters trying to kind of muster in the town and
oh, wow.
nothing you could do. And people just... It was really sad and emotional, and the explosions continued for a half hour, 45 minutes. So this is, before I get into the news today, my cautionary tale.
Mm-hmm.
Look, you're all adults, right? I know not everyone follows the fireworks laws or whatever. You're going to do your thing. Just be careful.
Yeah.
Be careful. It's not worth your home
soak
burning down.
Duds in water. Have a bucket.
Yeah, a bucket for quote unquote duds. So anyway, had to share that. Absolutely horrifying. So
that
just
is
please
terrible.
Be careful. I don't want to hear any stories about anybody's house burning down.
So did you stay with it until it was
kind
out,
of. I mean, we stayed with it until the explosions were sort of done because we didn't want to walk past it, obviously.
Right.
And then we stayed there until the fire department was there, but it was a complete loss and they were just trying to keep it cool.
But your cousin's house, okay, neighbors
they
around
were,
it.
They were fine. Neighbors around it were fine. Wow. A couple cars totally engulfed that were in the driveway. Just crazy stuff. Really sad. Anyway, so I hate to start off the show on that note, but man, that was quite a sad experience. Good reminder. I want you to enjoy the 4th of July and everything that comes with it, but I want you to do it safe and I don't want your freaking house to burn down. So over the weekend, Nicole's dreams came true and Dave Rickard officially filed his election paperwork with the Public Disclosure Commission. It is official. David G. Rickard is going to run for governor of Washington. I really never thought I'd see the day. I mean, we knew the rumblings behind the scenes. You know, I'd had a chat with Dave behind the scenes at an event. It was clear he was considering it. This is the unicorn for Republicans. I mean, it truly is somebody they've been wanting to run for governor. I think had he run in 2020, he would have won given everything going on with the pandemic and Jay Inslee. He had this weakened governor seeking a third term. And then it was Lauren Culp, someone who I knew from the very onset didn't have a chance to win. And I'll talk more about that in a moment. But so we don't know when the official announcement is coming from Dave Rickard. I heard it will be this week. And so we'll certainly be alert to what that announcement will look like and how he's going to message his campaign from the beginning. I think that very quickly it will become a two-person race. You know, right now you have a fairly crowded field. You have a few high-profile Democrats, Bob Ferguson, Senator Mark Mullett, Commissioner of Public Lands, Hillary Frantz. On the Republican side, we've had two candidates in, Dr. Raul Garcia, and Semi Byrd. We've interviewed both of them. I think very quickly once Dave Rickard gets in, you will have a Dave Rickard, Bob Ferguson race. Because you had the two Democrats, more moderate, who I think were counting on there being this really robust Republican field with a lot of people. They'd split up the votes they have, and then you'd have a top two Democratic general election. So I want to talk quickly about something I'm already seeing play out. And it is this divide within the Republican Party in Washington State. You have this faction of the party that would like to see the party almost go further to the right. More of a pro-Trump faction, supported Lauren Culp's campaign for governor in 2020, and really think that leaning into conservative values is sort of the key, which I tend to disagree with. We're in a blue state. I do believe that the prevailing wisdom of, hey, a moderate candidate has more of a chance. We know that's still hard. It's hard for any Republican. It's been 35 years or 40 years since Washington voters elected a Republican governor, 35 years since we've had one. And I really think you've seen the moderate ones do better. You know, the moderate candidates like Rob McKenna, Bill Bryant, they didn't win, but they did better than Lauren Culp, who lost by 500,000 votes. So there's this question right now in this, I won't call it bickering yet. I'll call it unrest within Republican ranks in Washington about what happens now with Dr. Raul Garcia and Semi Byrd. So Semi Byrd launched his campaign very, very early, as he should have. Nobody knew who he was. And he's been out and he's been doing campaign events, doing everything a candidate needs to do, trying to raise money. Dr. Raul Garcia, the same thing. He announced a little later than Semi Byrd, but people knew he ran in 2020 for governor and people knew he was going to mount another campaign. He wasn't really quiet about that. But here's the thing. I think their money dries up. And I think when you have a name like Dave Rickard, who's won in King County, who has, I wouldn't call it universal name recognition in Washington, but probably pretty close. I mean, he caught the Green River Killer. He was the elected King County Sheriff, a member of Congress for a while in the 8th Congressional District. So if I'm just being realistic, and I think if anybody's being realistic, the money dries up for Dr. Raul Garcia and for Semi Byrd. Yet I've seen sort of the more conservative part of the Washington State Republican Party almost feel like I don't want to say offended is the word, but wronged by the fact that Dave Rickard is running. Because they're like, well, Semi's been out there. He started his campaign early. He's been meeting voters and earning name recognition. And all of a sudden swoops in Dave Rickard, and it's going to dry up Semi's money. And they don't think that that's particularly fair. But look, I don't know that fair is the right word, because I think that anybody can run for governor if they meet the general qualifications. And so Dave Reichert certainly is qualified to run. I get that it might be annoying to supporters of Semi Byrd. We had Semi in. I thought Semi's a nice guy. You know, he certainly was a fun interview. We had a good time when he was in. But does he have the capability of winning? And I tend to think that Semi Byrd is very sort of, it's almost, he's like the Lauren Culp of this cycle, where you have people who are really excited about a different kind of Republican running, like Lauren Culp, and that excitement sort of builds up among a smaller group of Republicans, and then they just work themselves into a frenzy thinking, this is the guy, this is the guy, this is the guy. But when you talk about a statewide race with someone who nobody knows and who's not raising a lot of money, that's very difficult. So I just want to say that one thing I would hate to see is for that infighting to continue in Republican ranks when you have a candidate who actually is probably the last chance Republicans have in this state of getting a Republican governor. I truly mean that. I think if Dave Reichert can't do it, it probably can't be Don. So this is an opportunity where Republicans should be coming together saying, hey, this is a once in a generation opportunity. And I'm not saying like other people should drop out. That's not, you know, my job to say who should drop out, but I'm just saying Dave Reichert could win. And so don't let, you know, infighting and bickering ruin such a good opportunity for the state to have a little bit of balance. And maybe the only opportunity that this state will ever have to have balance and to have a Republican in the governor's office. So just something to think about. Don't be mad at Dave Reichert for running. I mean, he's been a public servant his whole life. People tell him to run all the time. God, I've told him to run before. And so I think that he is a natural choice for the job. I get that Semi might be annoyed, but you also have to think about who can actually win and who can raise funds. So something to think about. And Nicole's got her silver fox, who we're going to have in, and I'm just going to have one heck of a good time with it. Oh, yeah, you're welcome. One more update. I give you guys credit for this, and us a little bit, for getting the Catholic Church to change course on Referendum 101. Give yourselves a round of applause. Good, good. So we broke the news last week that the Washington State Catholic Conference sent out a bizarre email to parishes across the state saying, we're not taking a position on Referendum 101, and since we're not taking a position, that means you can't collect signatures at parishes. And we were like, what are you talking about? Because it's not as if they don't wade into politics. They took a position on the underlying bill, on the bill that R101 is seeking to overturn, Senate Bill 5599, which I believe is government-sanctioned kidnapping of kids. It allows the kids to run away to a shelter, say, I'm here for protected health care, and then the government won't tell you where they are, where their physical location is. That's weird. And so they put out this letter, even though they took a position on the bill against it during the legislative session, saying, we don't think that R101 has enough funding, and we think they're way behind on collecting signatures, so we're not even going to let parishes try to collect signatures. People were baffled over this. When we broke this story, I was getting text messages from Catholics, from politicians, being like, something is up here. This doesn't make sense. So anyway, a couple days later, the bishop in Spokane, Bishop Daly or Daly, I don't know how to pronounce his name, to be honest, he sent an email telling his people, like, ignore that. I didn't sign that. You guys go ahead in Spokane and collect signatures at parishes. I'm cool with that. And so I thought, good for him. Because up to this point, churches have been one of the primary gatherers of signatures for Referendum 101. I mean, it has an intersection of issues that I think Catholics and the Catholic Church are very in line with. I mean, for instance, this makes it easier for kids to go get an abortion if their parents disagree with it, and to get other types of medical care. And it only serves to break apart the family unit, which the Catholic Church is obviously opposed to. So the update over the weekend while I was gone, and I was sent this, like a million people sent me this as soon as it came out, because a lot of you who are Catholics wrote to your parishes, wrote to the Washington State Catholic Conference, and expressed your disappointment in the position that they took on this. And you were sending me some of the emails that you sent the Catholic Conference, and they, by gosh, they changed their minds. And they sent out an update saying, we're going to update our position on Referendum 101 to support it and allow signatures at parishes. This is awesome news. And look, we're in the final stretch here, ladies and gentlemen. We've got 12 days, I would say, conservatively, to get signatures in with enough time to be able to count them, see where you're at, and review them. And so the fact that, now look, it's late to the game. The initial letter that the Washington State Catholic Conference sent out was from June 15th. So June 15th, basically through the end of the month, they took the position of you can't collect signatures at our parishes. Think of that wasted time where they could have been collecting signatures. And during, you know, what is already an uphill struggle, 200,000 signatures in like a month and a half is a near impossible task. And I'm very aware of that. But if you had every Catholic church in the state working toward that goal from June 15th on, we would be in a much better position. And so look, better late than never. And I hope that every parish in the state is actively collecting signatures. But again, I want to congratulate you guys because we broke the story. And I really think it was those letters and those emails that you sent that forced them to change course on this. What you do and what you say matters. And when you push, it matters. Now, I also want to say, are we going to announce our... Now, we've been doing everything we can to collect signatures. And we are going to be holding our fourth and probably our final meet and greet slash referendum 101 signing event. We've had some overwhelming success so far. We were in Arlington, we were in Lacey, we had a quick pop-up event over in the Tri-Cities. And so I am going to predict, I'm setting a goal for our last one, which is going to be this Friday, Nicole, 1,000 signatures. I think we can do 1,000 signatures. So we're announcing right now our fourth and final meet and greet this Friday, July 7th, from 3 to 6 p.m. at Headworks Brewing in Enumclaw.
I like it.
I like Enumclaw. Enumclaw, you got fighting parents who fought back against the placement of sex offenders. So we already know you got parents there who care a lot. Awesome. Thank you to Headworks for hosting us. The other thing and why I think we can get 1,000 signatures is on Friday, there's also a classic car parade in Enumclaw. So we're going to do our meet and greet, come and sign, stop by quick, stay a while, whatever you want to do, at Headworks from 3 to 6 p.m. And then, heck, if we're having fun or the line's still there, we're going to stay. Find Nicole a boyfriend in Enumclaw while we're there. Whatever opportunity. But then you can stay and see some classic cars cruise through downtown.
Right. Bring your friends.
Bring your friends. There's already going to be a ton of people down there. So this is going to be our banger of a party. And I swear to God, if you guys aren't there... I'm gonna cry.
There are people I know. We have people in Maple Valley.
Oh my God.
We have people in Kent. I'm all these places that can get to Enumclaw.
Right. This is the only King County event we've done or are doing.
Mm-hmm. So no excuses.
No excuses. 1,000. And we're down to the wire. I mean, I'm not in charge of the R101 campaign. I will say I think it's been a little disorganized, but who am I? I'm just a lady that's helping to collect signatures. Right. I'm just a podcaster. I can't do anything about that. What we can do is spend any free time we have out there encouraging people to come out and sign. So I don't care if you live 100 miles away. We need you in Enumclaw this Friday from 3 to 6 p.m. And then you can stay for the classic car cruise.
Right.
So I don't think 1,000 signatures is unreasonable. We had like 500 or 600 people come to Lacey. I think Enumclaw, we can top that.
We're staying an extra hour.
And
Lacey, I did three hours.
Arlington, we're going to do 3 hours. I'm willing to, if there's a line, if there's people who want to sign, I'm willing to stay longer. So let's get 1,000 people there. We'll post this information across social media. Share it. This is going to be our celebration of all the work we've put in and of effort, all the effort you guys have put in to trying to stop Senate Bill 5599. So Headworks Brewing, Friday, July 7th.
And what better way to end your 4th of July week?
Right. With beer, good people, classic cars.
Right.
Nicole's going to put on a bikini and lay on the hood of one of them.
Okay.
No.
Don't make promises.
Oh, okay. I'll take that one back.
You never know.
So anyway, we'll do that. But this is going to be, I think we're going to get 1,000 signatures. I think it's going to be amazing. Okay. So we'll share more of that later. Some really key Supreme Court rulings that I want to talk about. And one of them is what is essentially the end to affirmative action in higher education. I think this is wonderful. I truly do. And obviously we'll talk about some of the controversy around it. But affirmative action to me has turned into a racist endeavor. I truly believe that. And I think that ending it when it comes to higher education, we'll talk about some other fallout that it might have, is setting our country on a path to finally be a nation where meritocracy is the law of the land. Meritocracy meaning that you get what you get based on your merits, not based on some immutable characteristic like your gender or the color of your skin or your sexual orientation. And let me say that I don't believe America has ever been a meritocracy, where truly everyone is equal under the law, has an equal chance under the law, and their merits decides where they can go in life. And the reason I say that is we had slavery. So obviously we're not a meritocracy when people are enslaved. We had Jim Crow laws for a long time. You can't be a meritocracy where people are literally kept out of institutions like higher education because of the color of their skin. And then as, you know, our nation improved in those regards, you had affirmative action, which was intended to sort of try to make up for some of this nation's past, and even with women and the ways that women were held back. But it almost served to do the reverse. And we've seen this. You know, I was reading a bunch of articles over the weekend about the admission standards and how, you know, if you're an Asian American who's like top of the class, someone black with much, much lower academic scores was more likely to get into certain universities and colleges. And that just doesn't make sense. If you're talking about higher education and you on the merits beat out someone else, if not for the color of your skin, and we advance another person, that's not a meritocracy. So this is the article from the Associated Press. Divided Supreme Court outlaws affirmative action in college admissions, says race can't be used. And I think the best thing for colleges to do to conform with that would just be to get rid of the box that asks you what your race is. I think if you just get rid of it and then you're judging people based blindly on their academic scores and achievements and extracurriculars, then that's how you just make sure that you don't have, and there's no gray area, right? Because you don't even know the person's race. I think that's the best way to do it. There was a poll out, this is from ABC News, saying most Americans agree with the Supreme Court decision restricting the use of race in college admissions. And again, I think that's reflective. What you see in the media always is the fringe opinions on anything, right? And then I think you have a lot of Americans who, if it's explained to them reasonably, factually, based on data and statistics for admissions, they're like, yeah, that doesn't make sense. Why would you put somebody in just because of the color of their skin when somebody else is performing better academically? The poll said a little over half of Americans, 52%, approve of the U.S. Supreme Court decision, 32% disapprove, and 16% say they don't know. So only 32% said that they disapproved, and 16% are still kind of out on it. But then there's a question about where else will this go? Because I think something else that has amounted and amounts right now to reverse racism are a lot of the DEI initiatives, the diversity, equity, inclusion. We've talked about stories out of Seattle. I mean, Bruce Harrell saying, hey, we're going to bring business back to downtown and prioritize business owners of color, when it's like, okay, if you have empty storefronts, I don't think you can be picky based on the color of someone's skin. You had a Seattle employee who sued, saying that he was basically told to resign from a position because he was holding back people of color. I mean, there's a lot of crazy examples of DEI gone wrong. And the Dallas Morning News, I think this is originally maybe a Washington Post article, said businesses brace for attack on DEI after Supreme Court dismantles affirmative action. So then there's a question about, okay, what could this mean for businesses when it comes to hiring? If they've got DEI initiatives to try to diversify, let's say, management positions or something like that, could that be the next thing to fall? Now, I would argue there's a big difference between what a private company does and what a public university does, certainly. So I don't know, although it's not, I mean, we're going to talk about another Supreme Court ruling later on that does have to do with private enterprise as well. So it's not outside the realm of opportunity that the Supreme Court could erode a business's ability to hire based on race, et cetera. And, you know, it's usually not blatant like, hey, we're only hiring black people, or we're only hiring, you know, an Asian American for this job, or a Mexican American or whatever. But when you talk about, for instance, corporations saying, hey, we're trying to hire more women or hire more people of color to fill the highest ranks, et cetera, and the DEI initiatives, I think the effect is reverse racism, certainly, in some instances. Now, on the college university front, one of the other things I think they ought to do away with is legacy admissions. Because I do think when it comes to hey, is this a disproportionate outcome for someone if you're just talking about based on the merits? And you have a lot of colleges and universities that do and have done historically legacy admissions, which means if you and your dad and your grandpa went to college there, then you get to go to college there too. And I get it in the sense that maybe they give a lot of money to the university or they're an alum, and so it's sort of the tradition of it all. But if the only thing you have going for you is that your family went there and your legacy admission, and you get in as opposed to someone, regardless of the color of their skin, who has better academic achievements than you, I don't think that's very fair either. So that's something I think that needs to be addressed too, is our legacy admissions, do they still play a role in where we want to be as a meritocracy? And I think the answer is no. But I think it would be great if in private enterprise, even in cities, for instance, City of Seattle, King County, I don't think that there should be DEI initiatives anywhere in the public sector, for sure. I hesitate to overregulate private sector. I mean, I think you could sue if you're someone who blatantly got hired or didn't get hired because of the color of your skin, but I don't know how far the Supreme Court will take that. But I think we should all celebrate a move toward meritocracy, where things that are out of your control, the gender you're born, the color of your skin, your sexual orientation, whether you're a mom or not, you know, all the things that I think historically have factored into whether people are able to get a job, and that I think we've moved on from in a very significant way, I think we should all celebrate, and it's very American, it's a very American ideal, that you get somewhere based on your merit and your hard work and what you put into something and what you're able to achieve, and not based on some characteristic that you can't control. So to me, this shouldn't be a divisive ruling. I know that a lot of talking heads in the media will try to make it divisive, but all right. And we'll talk about another SCOTUS ruling later on that has to do with LGBTQ issues and how I think it's going to be what Democrats try to pin the 2024 election on. But first, we've been talking about our friend Wes Jones, a wonderful real estate agent in our area. You can check him out at sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. He and his team have a really cool listing boost concierge service, where look, if you're going to sell your home and you're thinking, oh, I have so many updates I need to do to my house in order to get a better price for it, I don't have the money to do that, or I don't have the time to do that, well, don't worry, because Wes Jones and Associates will do it for you.
So we're going to come in, number one, and we're going to inspect a home, do a pre-inspection, and we're going to find out all those little hidden bugs that, you know, a buyer may be concerned with. And if a seller wants to do some cosmetic updates, you know, whether it's flooring, whether it's lighting, countertops, even a kitchen, we're going to help guide them through that. So the Listing Boost Concierge Service, what we can do is we can project manage those rehab projects. We have a list of contractors and preferred vendors that we like to work with and have a ton of experience with, and we'll take that off a seller's hands. We'll go ahead and run that project for them, and we even have some options where they can pay at closing out of their net proceeds.
Yeah, and he said that one of the reasons he likes doing that is that his dad was a builder, and so he had done a bunch of flips, you know, in his lifetime, and so he enjoys taking on those projects. But also think about that. If you're trying to sell your home, you've got a million other things you're doing, maybe you're moving out of state, the last thing you want to do is try to manage some sort of improvements to your house. And so Sell with Wes, Wes Jones and Associates can do that for you. So pay them a visit, sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. Okay, the following segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Do you feel poorer today? If you do feel poorer, it's because you are. If you don't feel poorer, you will, because you are. Because right now in Washington State, I would argue really across the country, money isn't going as far. But also at the same time in Washington State, we have a confluence of costs for working class people that are having a substantial impact and will continue to have a substantial impact on their ability to get by. And I think it's really getting to a critical point for some families. So we know, for instance, gas prices. I think Nicole last checked, still the highest in the nation. Maybe you better check AAA.
Yeah, I'll check again.
Make sure that that hasn't changed. But upon last check, Washington State still has the highest gas prices in the nation. And that is a big deal, when you stand in front of a pump and it's going to make or break your budget to figure out how much you can afford to put in your car, not to mention the impact that it has on prices at the grocery store. And I actually had, remember I told you guys to shout your gas prices? Well, thank you for some of you for sending in a video shouting your gas prices and thanking Jay Inslee for the carbon tax, which has led to the increases at the pump.
$98.82. Thanks, Jay Inslee.
Renton Highlands, $93.32. Thank you, Jay Inslee.
Thank God I live in Idaho where gas is affordable, right?
Right.
Not Washington.
Rub it in. I had to include the Idaho video because I thought that was funny. Rub it in. Very true. But look, you know, our gas prices have never been the highest in the nation, and now they are. And 6 months into the cap and trade program, which was Governor Jay Inslee's baby, which Democrats who voted for it, even the Department of Ecology set up and down, would not raise gas prices substantially, maybe pennies. And now here we are, 45 cents, 46 cents up, and it is indisputable that that tax and that program has raised costs for working families. And then you combine that with, in case you didn't hear, your paycheck, your next paycheck will be smaller because the long-term care tax has started. A long-term care tax that people don't want, that a lot of people are never going to need or use. And so starting on July 1st, so starting Saturday, there is a payroll deduction on your paycheck of 58 cents per $100 you make. 58 cents for every $100 you make. So that's an additional, for some people, $300, $400, $500 a year out of your paycheck at a time where other expenses like the cost of groceries and the cost of gasoline are going up as well. Now, for people who are doing well financially, yeah, this might not hurt them. But for working class people, the people who, gosh, Democrats, how often have they talked about our backwards tax structure, how it's hurting the working class and the poor even more. And then you go and pass things that raise the cost of fuel. It doesn't make any sense. And that take more money out of the paychecks of working class Washingtonians to pay for something that they may or may not benefit from 30 years down the road. And by the way, the maximum benefit, the maximum payout as a Washingtonian that you're going to get after paying into the long-term care program is $36,500. How many months of long-term care you think that's going to pay for? 3? 4? And then what happens when that $36,500 is gone? It's not going to do anything for people. And you made it nearly impossible for Washingtonians to opt out of it. So now again, you have this confluence of costs. You have increases at the pump, thanks to Governor Jay Inslee's carbon tax. You have money coming out of your paycheck, effective this past Saturday, thanks to the long-term care tax that a lot of people didn't even have an opportunity or an option to opt out of. On the show last week, we had in Senator Curtis King, a Republican, who was just baffled, as am I, by why Democrats would be doing all this, and even more than that, why they seem to get away with doing it.
Why are we doing this? At a time when people are struggling to put food on their table, we're going to take another 0.58 out of their paycheck. And then we're also going to hit them with a 45 to 50 cent increase in gas that can I afford it? I don't like it, but I can afford it. Yeah. I can live with it.
Yeah.
But what about the guy making $25 an hour or $15 an hour? Well, 16, I guess it is. You know, what about them? They're the ones that are going to struggle. Do I hear any worry about that from the governor and the others that voted for this? Not a bit.
Not a bit. And how can you be in public service? How can you work as a public servant and not worry about that every waking hour of every day? Especially when you're someone like the governor who has championed these programs, or Democrats in Olympia who voted for these programs, who voted for these taxes, who are taxing working class people to the point where they have to make some difficult decisions in their lives. And I wonder, don't you know what that's like? Do none of you know what that's like? And I know that there are lawmakers. And I think this is what bothers me the most. A lot of Washington state lawmakers are not rich people. They don't make a lot of money doing what they're doing. Some of them are. Some of them are business owners and do well financially. But I think that there are a lot of, even on the Democratic side, people who come from working class roots. And so that leads me to believe that they, I guess, just don't care. They don't care the extent to which they are hurting people financially. And that's incredibly bothersome. I would almost rather have a Democrat who I would rather have a Democrat who has just never been there. And like, they're rich and they don't really know, and that's their excuse, than a Democrat who's been there and still does this, who's been there and still does it to working class families. It's pretty egregious. And I don't know what it's going to take for Washington voters to also wake up to it. Because, I mean, these are the people who are getting voted in, right? But I think that these costs have come to a point where you can't help but notice. You can't help but notice what's happening at the gas pump. You can't help but notice the money that's coming out of your paycheck. But will that change voting patterns and voting behavior? I think that is the big question. That segment was brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. And Nicole did check, and it is indeed, we are still the highest gas prices in the nation. You said by quite a bit.
Yeah, by quite a bit. We're still in the 498 range. Okay. California is 481. But the national average is only 353 today, which to me, that's significant. We're paying a lot more than the national average.
Oh, it's greedy
average.
Oil companies.
Right.
Greedy gas and oil companies, Nicole, but only greedy to us.
Right, only greedy to us. But you know, some states are significantly lower to the, I mean, we're paying almost $2 more a gallon than some states.
Yeah.
I mean, that's significant for people.
Yeah, it's significant, and then it has the added annoyance of the lies about it. Where it's
right.
Like, we could have been planning for this. People could have been budgeting for this. They could have looked at alternatives. And instead, you made them believe, or you at least tried to convince them up to the last possible moment, that the carbon tax wouldn't do anything.
Right.
That it wouldn't do anything. And then with long-term care tax, you gave people a small window of opportunity a year ago to opt out, and to the point where you had long-term care companies, private companies, that just stopped offering the plans here because it wasn't advantageous to them anymore.
Right.
And so you're forcing this on people. And lying about it and gaslighting and pretending like the long-term care program is going to do something substantial for people. The long-term care program is really the government saying, hey, we know what's best for you when you turn 70 or 80 years old, and we're going to help make sure that you take care of yourself 40 years from now. We're going to do that by taking money or your paycheck right now. Stupid.
It's stupid. I mean, Mississippi, they're only paying $2.95.
And look, their cost of living is less. They're making less money.
Right.
However, we don't have to be suffering with these high gas prices.
Right. And I just think that, you know, as Republicans gear up for these elections, why wouldn't you not take somebody from Texas, Mississippi, Arkansas, Kansas, Oklahoma, Georgia, all of these states that, I mean, that's add up that money that you're spending on gas and say, hey, if you vote differently, you could maybe save this much money
a year. And just a little differently.
A little differently. And just give it a try.
And you have to think about what is important to you. You know, I think voters got distracted, and I'm not saying wrongfully so, but over abortion issues in the last election when they were under the crushing weight of inflation and all gas and all of this. But you saw a lot of people, and I'm not gonna tell people what should or should not drive their votes, but I think they saw that. We've talked about it as a generational issue.
Right.
Whereas like gas prices fluctuate up and down, but they're like abortion rights is a generational issue, so that's what's gonna decide it. Now, the next story I wanna talk about, actually I'm worried, is gonna become one of those generational issues that is gonna drive voters in 2024. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. So another SCOTUS ruling that happened that has the country in a frenzy had to do with LGBTQ rights, in essence, but also the rights of private businesses to refuse to provide services that go against their personal beliefs. So, for instance, if you are a web designer, as was the case of what the Supreme Court was reviewing, and you don't want to provide web design services for something LGBTQ related because it goes against your beliefs, should you have to do that? And the Supreme Court ruled, no, you shouldn't. That it's almost forcing speech upon businesses. It's almost forcing, like, the First Amendment, like, First Amendment in reverse, kind of, where it's like businesses, if you're creating, let's say, a marketing campaign, or you're creating a website for an LGBTQ event or an LGBTQ issue, and it goes against your personal religious beliefs, it's like, oh, I'm being forced to create this. and I shouldn't be, and that's what SCOTUS ruled. And I actually don't have an issue with that at all. Now, personally, I am supportive of same-sex marriage, but when it comes to, you know, for instance, a business that says, hey, I don't want to create this web design for you because my faith tells me that marriage is between a man and a woman. Fine. Then what happens to that business? They miss out on money, right? They're saying, personally, this is important to me, so I'm not going to get that money. And whatever other ramifications could come with that. It's not as if a business gets off scot-free for denying service to a gay couple. No, they're deciding that whatever consequences might come from that, be it financial, where they don't get the money from that business, and then that person's going to tell 100 of their friends, and then they're not going to get future business, and they've decided that. And that is, in a sense, I'm not saying a punishment, but it is a consequence, right? And so what I think the Supreme Court is saying is businesses have a right to decide that consequence for themselves and to say, hey, it's my business. If I don't want to serve this person because it goes against my personal rights or my personal beliefs, then I can do that. And whatever consequences come, then fine. Then I can live with that. But there has been, I think, this effort to now turn this into the issue that Democrats are going to try to fearmonger voters over in 2024. And so Biden, of course, this is the article from Reuters. Biden concerns Supreme Court LGBT rights ruling could lead to more discrimination. And I imagine that he means in the private sector. And there was this WNBA player, Natasha Cloud, who just went off on social media, on Instagram and Twitter. Again, fear-mongering over what this could do. And she's perfectly open to her opinion. But again, I think rather than looking at it as a ruling that had to do with the rights of private businesses, it's being looked at as an anti-LGBTQ ruling. So Natasha Cloud tweets, our country is trash in so many ways, and instead of using our resources to make it better, we continue to oppress marginalized groups that we have targeted since the beginning of times. Black, brown communities and LGBTQ plus. Man, we are too powerful to still be attacking issues separate. She went on to say, I feel like I'm going to see a civil war in my lifetime, which I got to be honest, I wouldn't rule that out either. The way things are so divisive right now. But I think one of my concerns, and I'm actually going to play you an example of something that I think could feed into this if Republicans aren't careful, coming up in our next segment. But I think that Democrats, if the economy stays the way it is, even in a state like Washington, where you have now a Republican candidate for governor who could actually win, I think that's when you start to see the fear-mongering come out. Okay, if we can't win on the issues, you know, whatever's happening at the southern border, crime, taxation, the economy, if we can't win on the issues, then how can we win? Well, we've got to scare voters, right? We've got to instill fear in voters. What issues are happening right now that could scare voters into believing that they're on the cusp of a generational change in, for instance, the rights of gay people in this country? And I'm fearful that the SCOTUS ruling could be part of that. I mean, you know, LGBTQ issues, but mostly transgender issues, I think, are at the center of a lot of culture wars. But if you make it about, oh, gay people are going to lose the right to marry, or gay people are going to be turned away from, you know, every business in this country, and it's the fault of Republicans, and we can't have, you know, the Supreme Court getting any more conservative, etc., you can already see the way that they're going to try to use that to distract you from day-to-day issues that really are impacting people negatively every single day. And look, I do believe, again, that there have to be some limitations. Like if you have a black person walk into a business and say, hey, I'm here because I want web design services, and the person says, no, I don't like black people, get out. That's a different situation. That's not based on a religious belief of any kind. It's just based on pure hatred. But I think that you have to accept the fact that there are religious people in this country and religions in this country that don't believe in same-sex marriage. They believe marriage is a religious institution between a man and a woman. And so as much as you might disagree with that, that is a deeply held religious belief for certain people. And the Supreme Court is saying that if you're a private business, then you don't have to give up that deeply held religious belief to perform an act or a service that you don't agree with. So like I said, I think Republicans on that particular issue, unfortunately, might be playing right into the hands of Democrats. I'm going to have an example for that in the form of a video from the Ron DeSantis campaign that I was just baffled. It's the weirdest freaking video. But first, we've been talking about our friends at First Mark Insurance, firstmarkinsurance.com. Mike and I took the First Mark Challenge. We're now members of the First Mark family. And it's been great because one, we took the First Mark Challenge and you learn a ton about insurance. It's like a little crash course in insurance where you feel like you finally understand what's on your policy and what it all means. So what they did, Dave Taylor and his team, they looked at all our current insurance. They went out, they assessed our needs, they shopped the market for us for free. Doesn't cost you a dime, just cost you a little bit of time. They came back and said, hey, in our case, we were woefully underinsured. So they got us better insurance for the same price. It was a complete no-brainer. Here's Dave Taylor, the CEO of First Mark.
So the risk is if you get in an auto accident and you don't have enough coverage, let me clarify, you get in an auto accident that's your fault and you don't have enough coverage, then they can come after you personally for any additional amounts over and above your coverage limit. And that means things like your retirement plan or come after your equity in your home or garnish your wages. So it's a big thing. And like with you and Mike, I just think most people haven't had someone take the time to explain it to them in terms they can understand and show them the how inexpensive it is to actually get the correct coverage.
Yeah, so all those things were great. And I've been saying there's no downside to it. The only thing it costs you is a little bit of time, but there's no downside to it. Either they're going to say, hey, your insurance is great, no big deal. You know, keep what you already have and carry on with your life. Or they're going to come back and you're going to get much better insurance for the same price, or you're going to save thousands of dollars like so many families have. So take the First Mark Challenge. It only takes a little bit of your time. You never pay First Mark for anything. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. Join the First Mark family like Mike and I did. It was so easy, and we have no regrets over doing it. Okay, let's dip outside of Washington State for a moment, but it's in line with the last story we talked about, how I feel like LGBTQ issues are shaping up to be this a fear-mongering point the Democrats are going to use leading up to 2024. And Ron DeSantis is playing right into their freaking hands. So the Ron DeSantis war room on Twitter, like, puts out all these highly edited videos that are designed basically to go viral. And their description is rapid response for Ron DeSantis. So, you know, Trump will say something and they'll put together a snazzy little video and throw it out there. And it's their rapid response social media team, basically. So they put out this video. This is so weird. A lot of it you can't, if you're going to only listen to the podcast, you might be like, what's going on? So I'm going to play the video, but then I'm going to describe what you saw in the video for people who aren't actually watching. So the tweet that went with us is, to wrap up Pride Month, let's hear from the politician who did more than any other Republican to celebrate it. Okay, hit the video, Nicole.
I will do everything in my power to protect our LGBTQ citizens.
If Caitlyn Jenner were to walk into Trump Tower and want to use the bathroom, you would be fine with her using any bathroom she chooses.
That is correct.
In the future, can transgender women compete in Miss Universe?
Yes.
Make America great again.
Psych!
It really has shut down drag.
Just produced some of the harshest, most draconian laws that literally threaten trans existence.
Congratulations, Ron DeSantis. Mission accomplished. You win.
That. So for those who are just listening, it plays these clips of Donald Trump, you know, talking about his support for gay Americans, saying that, oh yeah, I'd let Caitlyn Jenner use the bathroom at Trump Tower. And then it goes into this whole montage showing Ron DeSantis intermixed with pictures of like superheroes and bodybuilders, as if they're like, yeah, Ron is the same as these superheroes and like Top Gun Maverick and all of this. And then it's talking about, you know, it's playing these news clips about what he's done, I guess, to suppress the rights of the LGBTQ community. And this is being produced by Ron DeSantis' team. And what they want to say is, like, he's winning the culture wars. You know, he's saying no to unreasonable stuff. But the thing that's so weird about it is, in the process, it's vilifying Trump for some really reasonable stuff. He said, like, oh, I support the LGBTQ community. And then it's flashing on the screen that he sold Pride MAGA gear. So here's the issue I have with that. You know very well that I've pushed back against unreasonable stuff when it comes to transgender issues, like Senate Bill 5599, that's letting kids run off to a shelter if they want gender care, which is just crazy. I don't think that biological men should compete in women's sports. That's just nonsense. So I've pushed back against some of those things. But the weird thing that this video does is it almost puts, like, supporting gay people on the same playing field as the really crazy stuff. Like, oh, it's just as crazy to support gay Americans and to support their rights and to sell Pride t-shirts as it is to allow drag queens to expose themselves to kids. Oh, those are the same. And they're not. Like, I don't know what Ron DeSantis is trying to do with this, like, prove that he's more anti-woke than Trump, like, appeal to a base that's right of Trump. And is that really the people who are going to win the election for you? No, it's the middle, it's the moderates, it's the independents. And look, I think there are a lot of moderates and independents who agree with Ron DeSantis on squashing some of the really crazy stuff when it comes to transgender issues. But when you're trying to bash Trump for what? Supporting gay people? Who are you appealing to there? And again, you're just feeding into Democrats, and that's going to be fodder for their fear-mongering for 2024. It suits no purpose. If you're trying to win over Trump's base, don't even bother. People who are loyal to Trump have stayed loyal to Trump all this time, and they're not going to change now. So I from a campaign strategy perspective, it makes no sense to me. I don't get it. From a divisiveness perspective, it's incredibly divisive for no good reason. And from a strategy, if you make it passed and get the Republican nomination, it is going to only serve to be fodder for Democrats and turn off moderates and independents to you. So just a train wreck. And Ron DeSantis, don't give Democrats just red meat for their base. That's what you're doing here. It's weird. Because if you don't support gay people, which at the beginning of the video, again, Donald Trump is just basically saying, yeah, I support the LGBTQ community, and they're knocking him for it. I don't get what Ron DeSantis is doing, and I'm getting a little turned off to Ron DeSantis. I like some of the things he's done. I like some of the things that he's said, but he's so just soaking in the culture wars in a way that's just simply not productive. It's weird. Okay, coming up next, we're going to take your questions and comments from the live stream. But first, I've been talking about Eastside Weight Loss Clinic. We might be into summer, but it is not too late. Remember, I lost so far 36 pounds on the program, and most of that in 2 months. And you can absolutely do the things you love to do and still do the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic program. So don't think, oh, it's the middle of summer, I don't want to start a new diet plan and be miserable. You won't be miserable. There was nothing more miserable for me than gaining 42 pounds in 2.5 years during the pandemic and seeing pictures of myself and being like, oh, and not feeling great about myself. Now I feel wonderful. So try the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic plan. And it starts with just a free 15-minute consultation that you can do virtually. You can do the whole program virtually. But go to eastsideweightlossclinic.com. That's eastsideweightlossclinic.com. And just click on the button for a free consultation. It takes 15 minutes. Dr. Ryan Coogan will tell you about the program. You can decide, is it right for me? And is this a good time for me to start it? But it's 60 days that really will set you on a better path to take control of your weight, take control of your health, get your energy back. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com, EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. Okay, before we get to questions and comments from the live stream, I have to do a shout out. Something really funny happened while I was back home in Minnesota. So I'm sitting at my cousin's house, again, way border of Minnesota with Canada. It's called Lake of the Woods. And she's getting texts from one of her best friends, like from childhood, who's like, hey, do you know this? Isn't this your cousin? She was down a few towns away. And she has an aunt and uncle from Mount Vernon that were in town. And not only do they watch and listen to the show, but they're Patreon subscribers. Oh. So I was like, oh my God, give me their names.
Sweet.
And she came up, we took a picture together. Bill and Diane Goosa.
Okay.
Bill and Diane Goosa from Mount Vernon. Thank you for watching the show. Thank you for listening to the show. And thank you for supporting our mission to give common sense a comeback. That's kind of up by your parents, isn't it?
It is.
I wonder if they know Bill and Diane.
I'm not sure. I don't believe, but we would like to get to know them.
We would like to get to know them. A small world, though. I love that. Such a small world. Very cool. Okay, let's see what we got from the live stream today. Liz says, happy 4th, everyone. Happy belated birthday, Brandy. Thank you. So I turned 35 on Sunday. It was really funny. I posted on Facebook that if anyone asks, I'm 63. Don't I look good for my age? Because I never got why women lie about their age and go under. Because then people will be like, wow, that's how, she's 25. She looks terrible. So always, if I'm going to lie, I'm going to go older. I'm like, yeah, I'm 63 today. Unfortunately for me, some people on Facebook believed it. I was like,
no, they didn't.
They were like, oh, wow, da, da, da. I was like, not very many, but a couple.
I think you went high.
I'm 35.
Maybe they were just kidding.
I hope so.
Maybe that was sarcasm that doesn't, you know, work over social.
I'm 35. Don't teach me to lie about my age. 63. I like that
you can run for president. Are you sure? Are you sure you don't want in?
You know,
after that video.
After that video. It's snort jar.
Okay. That was mini.
I'll put 50 cents in the snort jar then. Yeah, I'm not 63. Nothing wrong with 63, but I'm not trying to double my age overnight. Greg said on Reichert and the confluence of taxes that are crushing Washington families, yes, tax overload, voting for Reichert. I'm really interested to see Dave's campaign announcement. I think there are a few things he has to contend with. His age is one of them. But at the same time, I mean, he's 71, I think. He's fit as a fox. He is nowhere near Joe Biden's current situation. Right. And he's a decade younger. And Democrats cannot use Dave's age against him when Joe Biden is the president.
Right.
It would be incredibly hypocritical.
I have heard some people that are worried about him in debates. I've heard some people...
Like he's not a good debater?
That he might not be able to handle the pressure of a debate, some of the questions, things like that. So that was one concern. But I actually think, well, I mean, that can go terribly wrong, or it can kind of show that he's just an average human.
Well, yeah, well, the thing is, if he's on stage next to Bob Ferguson, I have no doubt that Bob Ferguson is going to be a good debater. I mean, he's an attorney. That's what they do for a living, right?
Right.
But we've also seen over the years that your debate skills does not necessarily equal the outcome. Jay Inslee, who's possibly, I mean, I've moderated Jay Inslee gubernatorial debates. He's terrible. Mm-hmm. But, you know, so I don't know. Right. But yeah,
I've something to watch.
I've done many interviews with Dave Reichert, and I've never left being like, that sucked. So I think it just comes down to he can't. I mean, we're really way ahead of ourselves here, assuming that Dave Reichert is going to, you know, make it pass, and then they're going to do debates, and that Bob's even going to agree to do debates. I mean, I think Bob will, because for that reason, where he knows, like, hey, I'm very book smart, like, I'm going to be very good at this. But, and it also depends on the moderators. Are they going to let him squirrel out of answering questions about his record and all that? What else have you heard?
The other thing, I think you said he caught the Green River Killer, and he didn't. He was kind of the face of it, but it was other people responsible for catching him.
Is that true?
That's multiple people corrected you after he said that, so I wanted to make sure
he was involved in the Green River Killer.
Yeah, he was in that time frame, but technically, I don't think
interesting. I'll have to look into that next time handcuffed the guy. Okay. Because that's what I need to look into that more.
Yeah, we'll have to look into it more, but I think he did make an announcement. Maybe that was one of the things that I saw it was him that made the announcement. He was
captured. I see. Like the face of it. And people were like, okay, I gotcha. Gotcha. Yeah. And he can't make his entire campaign off of the Green River Killer. He was the sheriff. I think public safety, he has a leg to stand on there when it comes to an issue that is really important to people across the political spectrum right now. And certainly Bob Ferguson does not have a good track record on valuing public safety and the rule of law. And as the state's chief law enforcer, that's highly concerning.
Yes, and I do think that most importantly, as you've stated many times, but name recognition is huge. And
it is
why Trump won, I believe. When the second he announced, I was like, he will win. And I was told, no, you're wrong. Like, he's not going to win. And I was like, absolutely he is. We're in the land of the Kardashians, where they're famous from their name. Like, you're the most well-known, you're the most successful in different cases. And so I think that I think you are correct when you say name recognition, it should be given this like huge level of importance, I guess. And the other two just have not been gaining enough speed to get that.
Well, and if you know, Sammy Byrd was raising a bunch of money you know, name recognition be damned, I think it'd be a different conversation about like, oh, here's this unknown and he's doing really well fundraising, but he's not.
But then he would
really
gain the name recognition, right? With the money. The money will get you the name recognition, but the money is so split within the party throughout the state that I just don't know that you can gain that. Cole probably was the closest at like a newcomer getting there because of some of the money, but
Well, Lauren Cole had a really masterful social media strategy. He really did. But then again, it goes into that issue where I think Sammy Byrd is similar to him in the fact that you have a small group of conservative Republicans who are really excited about him. Mm-hmm. And like Lauren Culp would have these events all across the state. And I covered a couple of them when I was at Fox. And I swear it was the same 1,000 people who'd like in the, a couple hundred of them. And it was like the same ones traveling around the state. So you get into this, there's a phrase for it that's sexual that I won't use, but it's what I've used behind the scenes where it's just like you get into this circle something where you really get excited about something that not enough other people are excited about.
Right.
So anyway, it'll be interesting to see.
People are important.
Yes.
To campaigns.
Oh, I'm not saying, but you are talking about an estate sometimes with millions of people and you need to expand your appeal.
Gives you a false sense of security, maybe.
A false sense of security and excitement around a campaign, because you're sort of in this inner circle where it's like, oh, they're excited on social media and I see signs in people's yards and it's like, oh, I'm going to win. I don't think you are. Mm-hmm. Patreon. Kim on Patreon says, I'm optimistic about Reichert and I'm from Enumclaw. Woot woot. See you Friday. I'm excited now. Kim, we'll see you Friday and get all your friends, everyone you know, anybody you've ever had any kind of contact with ever in your life should be there. On 101 in Enumclaw, Gabe says, Nicole, can you bring a R101 sheet to Blaine with you since Brandy doesn't love us folks up here in the northwest corner of the state, huh? That's not true. That's not true.
We can't get everywhere.
We can't get everywhere, and we need to go where there's a concentration of people who we know love us. So maybe you should tell more of your friends about the podcast in Blaine.
I'll bring it. So if you see me, maybe I'll just have one in my back pocket
for you.
You
should always have one.
Yes.
But also, when you come to Enumclaw, which all of you are going to, grab a sheet if you feel like you can even get 5 signatures on it.
Yep.
Because if you look at the multiplication, if we have 500 people who come, they all grab a sheet and they get even 1, 2, 3, or 3 of their friends to sign it, then now 1,500 signatures just like that. Yep. So that's really important to do as well. Rachel said, our parish ran out of pages. Love it. See? Vicky said, signed at Cascade Community Church in Monroe. We'll be there next Sunday too for y'all in Sky Valley, 8 to 1 p.m. Candy says, thank you for setting up an Enumclaw signing party. We are in Kent and plan to come and sign. Thank you, Candy, with a K. I'll see you there. Christine says, shoot, I wish I could be there. I do keep the signature forms with me, though, to collect signatures on the go. Oh, that's awesome. 100%. And I know we've heard from some people who said they went to reject5599.com, tried to request forms, never got them. I reached out to the people over the weekend. It sounds like they've caught up a little bit. So with those requests. So hopefully if you go back and ask for them. And also, even if you can't come to Enumclaw, please make it to a signing location. Please do. Reject5599.com. Reject5599.com. It's too important. The stakes are too high. If you don't stop this, there will be other bills next session, and they will be worse. Mark my word. On gas prices, Kelly says, we live in Lubbock, Texas. Oh, you little
thanks
SOB. Gas is $2.86 this morning. Okay. Nicole says, is this you?
No.
Okay. Gas prices are killing me. I'm a newly widowed mom of 3. I'm sorry to hear that. And a hospice nurse who drives all over King County to care for people. Thanks, Dictator Inslee. I'm sorry to hear, first of all, that you're newly widowed and a mom of 3. But like you said, I mean, that is when you're, especially when you're driving for work and you have no good, it sounds like maybe you travel a lot to different places. What, are you going to take the bus everywhere to go care for patients?
Right.
No, that's not feasible. That's not feasible for people. If there were easy, readily available options for public transit, electric vehicles were inexpensive and charging stations everywhere and they could go great distances, I don't know that this would be as big of a deal. But when this is the primary mode of transportation for people and it's up 45 cents a gallon, it's a big deal. Mm-hmm. So not only should you not lie about it, but you should express concern for people who are struggling under your policies. It just, bleh. Jackie says, I never fill up my tank. I fill up once a week and I only put $25 in, $30 if I'm feeling wild. I get like half a tank if I'm lucky. Oh. I'll say it.
I missed that. she snuck in a bad word that I wasn't
Jackie's
really...
mad. She said, Inslee.
Just, no, hey, don't say it.
Don't say it. Inslee can S my sack.
There you go.
He's not getting $100 for a tank of cash from me.
She snuck that in because I wasn't looking for that as a bad word.
That's funny. Okay.
But I think that's an interesting methodology there, sure. Like just doing $30 a week and I don't know,
it's still,
if you can.
But the downside is if it keeps going up, then if you had done a full tank, but yeah.
Yeah.
So good comment. on First Mark. Oh, we got a little comment on our sponsor.
Yeah.
Jean says, thank you, Brandy, for the First Mark challenge. We did it and are saving over $100 a month. Have better coverage, great customer experience. But seriously, this is another thing about First Mark. The money you can save doing First Mark can compensate for the gas prices and the long-term care tax.
Does it make it okay?
It does. It doesn't make it okay. But if you're looking for ways to save money and you really are on a very, very tight budget, it just takes time. You never pay First Mark for anything. And I know it sounds like I'm doing another commercial again, but again, if it can save you $100 a month like it is for Gene, or some people save thousands of dollars a year.
Just give it a try.
Give it a try. If you walk away and you don't change your insurance, then you just wasted a little bit of time. But that is a good option for people. Okay, on DeSantis. Jill said, I was trying to decide if that was for or against DeSantis. He isn't helping his cause, it doesn't seem to me. It was weird because it almost seemed like it was anti-DeSantis because it had all these headlines about how extreme he was. Then it was like DeSantis with a bodybuilder.
Right.
DeSantis with a superhero, because they want to lean into that, that he is the king. He's the hero of the culture wars.
Right. I do think you have to give some, you know, thought or some consideration to that's this very specific Twitter that's... Yeah. You know, you're going to just target your audience that loves him or whatever it is. Like, I don't think that you can pin that on him necessarily, because there are also Biden people that probably make some Biden ridiculous ads that he's
But this
not
is the DeSantis
funding.
War Room for the campaign, and it has 23 million views.
But it's not going out on TV or anything, right?
Well, yeah, but you don't think that a clip from that is going to show up if DeSantis is the Republican presidential nominee and be used in ads against him? That he's anti-LGBTQ, that he was making fun of Trump for the simple act of selling
terrible.
Pride t-shirts?
All right.
Again,
yeah, terrible.
Differentiate. Like,
it's ridiculous.
Right. Differentiate between crazy trans ideology and, like, you know, half-naked drag queens around children and supporting people and human beings and their right to love who they love. If you can't differentiate between that, there ain't an independent in the world who's going to vote for you.
If this podcast doesn't work, we're going into campaign.
Seriously.
Consulting.
Whose campaign can I run? Whose campaign can I run? Because it's just like, why'd you do that?
I know.
So dumb. Todd said, WTF was that? That was DeSantis's people? Seems more like an attack ad against him. Exactly.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, go Trump. He loves gay people. And it was like, DeSantis is like, nope. That's so bad. Oh,
maybe it snuck in there. I don't get it.
Crazy.
I'm really sad about DeSantis because it seemed like for a while that he was the guy that could do it maybe.
Yeah. Well, he's very smart. He is just matter of fact. But again, he dives into the culture wars too much, and he does things that are contrary to what Republicans claim they're about, which is limited government interference and intrusion. Mm-hmm. And he's doing things that amount to overreach, like in the opposite direction, like overreach on the left and the right all comes, circles around together and meets on the back end. And it's like, that's what you're doing. Just leave people alone. And
it's funny because I think he just handed over too much. Like, it's too much work, so then you're like, okay, just do whatever.
That's why I can't run a campaign. That's why I could never run for something. Because I'd be like, no, I have to do the social media posts and all that for
That's
myself.
That's true.
Because I have to
take more from you, and you're like, nope, I got it.
Well, half of that is because I don't remember my passwords.
True.
You know that. And I'm already logged in, and I can't unlog out. But it's also like, oh, no, I would want to see every ad that goes out. Like, I got to see that. I got to approve that.
I think that's part of the gig, though. I think you're putting your name, you're stamping your name on something. You need to be a part of it.
Right. You should. Well, maybe he was
there
a part
no
of it.
There's no way he was a part of that. No,
crazy.
I hope
not. Okay. Let's get to our closing sanity check, shall we? Well, I don't know if you guys heard, but Elon Musk is just angering people on his own platform again. So he is doing something that I didn't even know this was something being considered or even something that needed to be done. He came out and he announced on Saturday to address extreme levels of data scraping and system manipulation, we've applied the following temporary limits. Verified accounts are limited to reading 6,000 posts a day, unverified accounts to 600 posts a day, and new unverified accounts to 300 posts a day. And then after that, apparently people would get this notification that said, oh, you've exceeded your limit. So if you have an account that's not verified, that you haven't paid for Twitter Blue, and you looked at 600 posts or they came across your Twitter timeline, you'd all of a sudden basically be locked out of Twitter and saying, oh, you've exceeded your rate limit.
Take a nap.
So there were a lot of people upset by this. Now, I will say some of the ones who've been most upset are the people who are like, I hate Elon Musk and Twitter. And now they're upset that they can't see more than 600 mm-hmm. tweets a day. So I'm kind of like, that's suspicious. But then even Joey Jones, who I like very much, he's a host over on Fox. He had a comment. He said, Elon Musk under fire from Twitter users for limiting posts that can be read. He picked a fight with America. That's from Joey Jones. He's picked a fight with America. Elon Musk said this himself. First, let me just read Elon's tweet, because it actually speaks to my sanity check for the day. He said, this is July 1st, after the people were losing it over the rate limit. You wake up from a deep trance, step away from the phone, to see your friends and family. So he's basically telling people like, hey, use this as an opportunity to go commiserate with someone face to face. Go see your friends, go see your family, get off Twitter. And I actually think that Elon Musk, although I'm not sure why he's doing this, I'm not sure if it's the best thing for the platform, he's doing us a favor. There is no reason on God's green earth why any of us need to look at more than 600 tweets a day. And when people who are verified, like I am, have a limit of 6,000 posts a day, Lord Jesus, if I ever hit my 6,000 posts a day limit, take my cell phone away. Just take it away, Nicole. I never want to have it back.
Okay.
Because you cannot maintain your sanity if you are looking at that many posts on Twitter every single day. So thank you, Elon Musk, for reminding us what's important in this world and for helping us to keep our sanity intact, even if just for one day longer. And that has been your sanity check, and that has been today's episode of Undivided. Reminder, we will not have a show tomorrow because it is the 4th of July. I'm hoping that you're going to do exactly what Elon Musk says you should do. Get off your phone, get off Twitter, spend time with your friends and family out in the real world. Enjoy the sunshine. But as I said earlier, don't burn your house down. Don't burn someone else's house down. Think twice before lighting off illegal fireworks. I'm such a curmudgeon. But now I've seen it with my own eyes. Saw a house burn down before my very eyes.
It was wild.
So just be safe. I want you to come back to the show on Wednesday with all 10 digits on your hands and all 10 digits on your toes. And that would make me very happy. And also a reminder, and I'll post it across all my social media pages after the show today, meet and greet, the party to end all parties in Enumclaw this Friday, July 7th, 3 to 6 p.m. at Headworks Brewing. We hope to see you there to help us fight for parental rights in the state of Washington. We are running out of opportunities to get enough signatures to get referendum 101 on the ballot. So if you've been thinking about it, this is your opportunity. So we'll be talking about that on the show all week. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. We appreciate every single one of you. If you have not become a subscriber to the show already, you can do that at undividedpod.com. UndividedPod.com. Have a wonderful, fantastic, safe 4th of July.